Welcome to the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge, a weekly show from our Toronto Maple Leafs writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, prospects, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, our team covers everything that happens with the blue and white. Come on in and pull up a chair. Welcome to the Maple Leafs Lounge.
Hey, everybody, welcome inside the Maple Leafs Lounge, brought to you by the Hockey Writers. I'm your host, Kevin Armstrong, joined as always by my friends and colleagues, Peter Barachini and Alex Hobson. We write for the Maple Leafs under the hockeywriters.com tab. So what's old is new again in Leafland, as Nick Ritchie is back on the top line with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So right back to where we started in week two of the season. I put out an article earlier this week, guys, saying that I think this is Nick Ritchie's last chance to do this, because there's so many other guys that Sheldon Keefe needs to give a good look at. I will also say I do like that Sheldon Keefe is doing this for a few games, not just one game or two periods. He said he's going with it for a little while to see what happens. So I want to see from you guys, what do you think? Is Nick Ritchie fitting in on that top line now? Should he continue with this? Where are you with Nick? Let's start with you, Alex.
I mean, obviously, if you've been watching the games, I don't think Ritchie's really working on that top line with Matthews and Marner. And, you know, truth be told, I'm actually not as much of a staunch critic of Ritchie as some other people are. I think lately, especially, he's been getting his chances and the bounces haven't been going his way. He's been getting his opportunities, but there have just been so many, well, not so many, but there have been other combinations that have worked so much better in the top six besides Ritchie and Matthews and Marner. I was actually saying earlier that I'd like to see them go back to the top six that they had when they were winning most of their games, which was Bunting, Matthews, Nylander, Kerfoot, Tavares, Marner. And I think I do understand what Sheldon Keefe is trying to do, because, you know, when Nick Ritchie's making the money it is at $2.5 million and he's on a two-year deal versus a one-year deal, when he gets off to a slow start like this, he's not going to have a lot of value at all. And the Leafs need to do everything that they can to get Ritchie going. So I understand putting him on that top line and trying to get his confidence up and trying to get him playing with some good players and hopefully getting the bounces to start going his way. But I think it's pretty obvious based on what we've seen this season that that combination doesn't work.
Peter, are you in that same boat, or are you leaving him in the top six and in that top line role?
Yeah, kind of like both of you. I mean, his time is very much running out and he's got a very short leash right now, considering the fact that too many times a season where he's had, you know, a few good looks in one period and then in the next period he's out taking a stupid penalty or making a big mistake and then he's, you know, stapled to the bench. I mean, that technically, or that really isn't unacceptable for a player that you're trying to motivate him and try and get him going to be a top six producer, because there have been looks and so many chances that where, you know, Mitch Marner's making a nice feed across and Richie's doing what he's supposed to, go to the net, be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, even games against the Nashville Predators, those are the type of plays that we want to see Nick Ritchie make and sort of try and find that offensive consistency, because it's kind of similar to Wayne Simmons. He's getting some looks when he can get them. It's just not going in and it's just very bad puck luck. But there comes a point where you have to draw the line, say it's over, and try and find the new combination. And Alex mentioned, you know, go back to what made them successful in the first place, where they went on that first winning streak, where, you know, the goals were starting to come in. The offense was more effective and productive. You know, I'm probably one that's been pretty critical of Nick Ritchie, considering the amount of money that he's getting. And I even made a suggestion when Kyle Clifford was on waivers, saying that Kyle Clifford over Nick Ritchie, because, you know, cheaper money, you could probably get him for, obviously production won't be there, but you'll probably get more value out of him at a cheaper contract than Nick Ritchie at this point. And I got lambasted for it. And guess what? Maple Leafs traded for Kyle Clifford and he's now back on the Maple Leafs. So I think maybe if things don't work out, you may try to look at him, because that $2 million is going to be pretty hefty for a player that's going to be on the fourth line or possibly in the press box, because that's way too much to take on. And even if you trade him for like very little, you at least get something in return for him. So you have different options with Nick Ritchie right now. If maybe for some divine reason that maybe he does break out and he goes on a tear, maybe you extend the leash a little bit, but for now it's very short.
Yeah. I was on the same wavelength with you with Nick Ritchie's last chance due to Kyle Clifford. And I think when people were upset about it, they were looking at it and saying, well, you're talking about a top line player. Kyle Clifford's not a top line player. But the point was that if Nick Ritchie can't produce and be a top line player, then he is a fourth line player. Mm-hmm. And he suddenly becomes the most expensive fourth line player on the Leafs. And in that tough guy role, by far the most expensive guy. And
we saw that with Matt Martin with $2.5 million previously. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is the HockeyWriters.com show called the Maple Leafs Lounge. Make sure you head on over to the Hockey Writers and sign up for the morning skate. It's a pretty great email that comes in and brings you all, not just the scores from the night before, but a bunch of snippets and some great information. And also the daily download is there. That brings together all the stats, news, everything from the Maple Leafs from the night before. And you can find our articles there as well. Another article, guys, that I wanted to get your take on. And I remember on this show, we've said it more than once when it was happening. When Frederik Andersen, the writing was on the wall that he was leaving, we all kind of knew he was going to be a Vezina winner. Because we followed this team long enough that we know what
exactly happened.
This was going to happen. We didn't want to, like, you don't want to admit it, but we knew it was going to happen. And I actually remember Alex saying he's going to go on a tear now and he's going to do this and that. I remember this. He's been phenomenal. I've actually really enjoyed watching the Carolina games. I'm still a huge Frederik Andersen fan. And what he's doing in Carolina is awesome. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And he's just standing on his head. They're a great team to watch. If you've had enough of the Maple Leafs, I tell you, Carolina is a team that you might want to cheer for. They're fun to watch right now. But so I put an article out saying that I think the Maple Leafs were wrong when they let go of Andersen. And here's why. And I know hindsight's 20/20, but to me, the training staff that had worked with him for 5 years, they had ample amount of time with him before, and they got him back to 100% health. Freddie said several times, I feel better than ever. I'm ready to go. And he said, as he was walking out the door, he wanted to have his first conversation with Kyle Dubas. Then it gets leaked out there that he's asking too much money. And that makes the whole fan base go, no, you can't come back. Then you had an awful season. But then this team, Carolina, felt 2 points short of the President's Trophy. They clear out all their goalies and they go and get Andersen because they say he can take us to the next level. That was the first red flag to be like, wait a minute, what does Carolina know that Toronto doesn't know? And that's my question. I don't understand what happened here, because if anyone should have known that Freddie was back and Freddie was healthy, it should have been Toronto. So Peter, what's your thoughts on that? With what happened there? Why? And I know this is hindsight's 2020 story, but why isn't Freddie still a Maple Leaf?
That's a good question. I mean, let's face it. If we still had the tandem of a healthy Frederik Andersen, because I know that, you know, he had that injury, came back. And I think at one point he even said that he knows he wasn't healthy enough to come back, and he still made the attempt, but then it still hampered his play and the play of the team. And he even said that, you know, that was on me. And, you know, I admire his dedication to wanting to come back and help this team succeed. That's what you want in a goalie. And I think the fact that, yeah, the money that he was asking or rumored to be asking was going to be a little higher than expected than the $5 million that he was currently on. But then he ends up taking $500,000 less to go to Carolina for 2 more years. And I think maybe that's what Toronto Maple Leaf fans were hoping if he was to re-sign in Toronto, maybe trying to get it down to 4, 3.5 to try and say, hey, kind of prove me right now. And I mean, like you said, hindsight's 2020. It's working out right now. Who would have thought that this would be a major sticking point right now or talking point that we're going back to saying maybe we should have kept Freddie Anderson in the fold. But then again, his injury concerns the last few seasons have been pretty noticeable, and that could be a reason why the Maple Leafs are thrown off. But hey, whatever is happening with the coaching staff or even the training and health and trainers doing their part to help keep him healthy, they're doing a great job right now. So I think maybe you just gotta let it go. I mean, plain and simple, it is what it is. It happened. Big mistake, kind of similar to Hyman, but at the same time, is that a risk that you're willing to take? Because if you still sign him to 4.5 and he's back on the shelf, similar to kind of what Peter Mrazek is right now, you're still going to have to deal with that much cap and a goalie situation that's, you know, still, you know, teetering on the edge of what do you got to do? Do you have to bring in another goaltender at that point?
Yeah. And Alex, I think what adds to this is the fact that I think the front office of Carolina just destroyed Toronto here, because not only did they get Toronto's garbage and they've made it the masterpiece, they just let Mrazek walk over to Toronto and take his injuries over there and, you know, give up 7 goals in his first 5 periods of play with Toronto. Like, the front office of Don Waddell and the Carolina Hurricanes are making Toronto look pretty silly on this deal.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one thing I want to say is, Peter, I think that predicting that we would be talking about Freddie Anderson's resurgence was about as much of a sure thing as saying it's going to snow in January. I mean, this is pretty much guaranteed that we were going to be having this conversation. But, you know, here's my take on the Freddie Anderson thing. I'm not taking anything away from what he's doing in Carolina. I think everybody predicted that this was going to happen because he's going to play in front of a very good Carolina defense and a team that I think is without a doubt top 5 in the league and should be one of the top contenders for the Stanley Cup this year. And I think what's important to remember is that a lot of what Freddie's doing is because he got that fresh start in Carolina. And I don't know if you can convince me that he would have been playing like this if he stayed in Toronto. And I think that's also important to look at the trajectory of where his career in Toronto was going. I mean, let's face it, Freddie Anderson, I love the guy too, and I didn't like to see how he sort of spiraled down towards the end of last season. But the Freddie from the last 3 years in Toronto versus the first 2 years in Toronto was completely different. And I also think it's a little too early to say that Mrazek's, I mean, it doesn't look good because he had that injury right off the hop and he hasn't looked great in the 2 performances that he's had so far. But if he comes back from this groin injury and goes on a tear and takes some weight off of Campbell's shoulders, I mean, then again, you can make the hindsight argument and say, oh, well, maybe he's not so bad, because in his limited numbers last year, he had Vezina numbers. And granted, that was only over like 11 games for Carolina. But either way, I think Freddie's start in Carolina is just a lot to do with the fact that he needed that fresh start. And he's doing it in front of a great defensive core, and I couldn't be happier for him, but I'm not really finding myself, you know, playing the what if game and saying, oh, maybe the Leafs should have kept him and spent that money on him just because of how amazing Jack Campbell's been this year. And I know you touched on that in your article, Kevin, but that's really playing a big part in softening the blow for me. I think if Campbell was struggling to start the year and Mrazek had these injury issues, then yes, we'd be sitting here saying we should have spent that $4 million on Freddie. But I don't know. I think the conversation we'd be having would be a lot different if the Leafs brought Freddie back at $4 million and he was playing the same that he did last year. And I have a feeling that possibly could have been the case. Overall, I'm super happy for Freddie. I'm glad he's finding success in Toronto, but I don't know. I'm not too broken up about how he's doing. And I don't know if him coming back would have really moved the needle much. So that's kind of my take on the whole thing.
Yeah. That's good, Alex. It's the woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's always what, when I was growing up, when I was more your guys' age, I should say, the pick a path books, I always liked reading those. And it's kind of like you think now, if you're right, we don't know. We don't know if his head would have been where it is. He seems like a totally relaxed Freddie now. And I think a few other things out of that whole story, that it was Jake Gardner that talked Freddie into coming to Carolina, another whipping boy in Toronto, you know. And I'm going to say it now and we can come back to it, but I've got a bad feeling that Freddie Anderson will be the guy that will knock Toronto out of the playoffs. Oh,
don't too early.
You had to go there.
It's too really early. Had for to go that. There.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry to say, but as I was writing that story, I just kept on having that thought of like, mm-hmm. I don't think this is over. This is going to end even worse than we're seeing it right now.
Then again, it just makes everything come around full circle, right? Leaves, it goes on a tear, knocks Toronto out. It's going to be another story in the Maple Leafs playoff history book of what's going on.
Yeah.
The and cursed. I'm going to be gray by 25.
Well, there's just for men, and I know with your mustache there, we know that Matthews, when he grew his mustache in, he said that he just for mended it. So, you know, you can get away with that still.
All right. Good to know.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys see that Matthews reached his Movember goal? So I guess it's got to come off now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And EA Sports is. Yeah. EA Sports is sitting there going, no.
We have to change his graphic now.
With your mustache. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, again, this is Maple Leafs Lounge. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure you like and subscribe and follow us on all your favorite social media channels. And on iHeartRadio, this is where you can download this podcast. So to keep it the whole realm of Leafland is what we cover in this room. And Alex has been staying together with the guys that we're not going to hear from for maybe next year, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years, who knows. But great article on a guy that you probably last heard in the World Juniors. And he played very well there, but then we don't hear from him until now. Alex, take the story from there.
So, yeah, I was writing this article about Topi Niemelä, who the Leafs took in the third round in 2020. He's a right-handed defenseman. And as we all know, if you watch the World Juniors, he was the named defenseman of the tournament for Finland. He had 8 points in 7 games. But his season last year was riddled with injuries. I know that he missed the rest of his season after the World Juniors. I think he went back to Finland for a month and he's had a knee injury, if I remember correctly. And I don't know if you can fill me in here, Peter, but I know that he had another injury before the World Juniors, but it was separate. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it was, but either way, injury riddled season. He finished the season with 4 points in 15 games in Finland. And this season, he's come out absolutely swinging. He's got 20 points in 22 games for Karpot in the Finnish league this year. And I was writing an article about how I wanted him to be considered an untouchable prospect. But what I didn't realize until I started writing the article is that Niemelä is currently putting together a season that's never been seen before from a 19-year-old in that league, a 19-year-old defenseman, I should say. So the all-time highest scoring season by a 19-year-old defenseman in that league was Sami Vatanen in 2010. And he had, I believe it was 30 points in 52 games. So just for reference, Niemelä's got 20 points in 22 games right now.
Wow.
And there have been guys in the past. Sorry, yeah, 23. Yeah. So there have been guys in the past who have kind of been on this pace. Miro Heiskanen, when he was 18 years old in his draft year, he had 23 points in 30 games, I believe it was. But Niemelä is set to play a full season in Finland this year. And if he stays on this pace, he is going to blow Vatanen's total out of the water. And I think right now we're seeing a situation where Niemelä is going to play out a season in Europe, probably finish his season, finish the playoffs, depending on how far they make it, and then join the Marlies at the end of the year. And I think at that point, he'll be on an entry-level contract and he'll be playing for the Marlies full-time next year. But just to further add to this point, Niemelä before this year has never really been known as an offensive defenseman. When the Leafs drafted him, he had, I think, 7 games played in 51 games or 7 points in 51 games or something like that. And, you know, you look at those totals and you kind of shrug thinking that's like nothing crazy. But what made it so impressive was the fact that he was getting all those minutes at 18 years old, because I've said it before when I'm talking about European prospects, they are not concerned about developing guys for North American teams. So you have to really earn your spot in the lineup. If you're not one of the top six defensemen on that team, you're not going to get played no matter how old you are. And Niemelä's defensive game was good enough to keep him in the lineup at 18 years old. And now he's found this offensive game and he's putting together one of the best offensive seasons by a 19-year-old defenseman in history. So I think the Leafs have a real gem in Topi Niemelä. I think he's going to really make a case. And I was even saying in the article that if it came down to it, I would almost consider trading Rodion Amirov or even Nick Robertson before I would trade Topi Niemelä, because you've got yourself a mobile right-handed defenseman and he has all the tools to be an effective top four guy. And if he makes it over to North America next year, I could see him being one of those guys the Leafs look to for a call-up, because he's just, ever since they drafted him, he's done nothing but impress. And this, what he's doing in Finland right now is just insane. I don't think anyone's ever seen a season like that before. So yeah, really worth keeping an eye on him in the future.
Peter, you keep an eye on all the draft picks the draft prospect corner and been doing that for a long time now. What do you think of that assessment? Would you, and that's some big words to Amirov would go before Topi when Amirov was the first overall or the first round pick of the Maple Leafs. And we know what Robertson has done other than his injuries, but to say that those two would be traded before, that's big words, man. So what do you think, Peter? Is that, are you with that?
Alex's article really nailed it on the head, and just that assessment right there alone says why Niemelä should be an untouchable prospect. And I would hang on to Rodion Amirov more than anything, and maybe possibly trade Nick Robertson. Because you also got to look at Matthew Nyes and his development and the way that he's producing right now, as well as another reason why, hey, should we maybe try and part with one of our top prospects now that we got two other players coming up in Niemelä? And yeah, and I'm just going to go one further than Alex and say maybe he earns a contract if he comes over at the end of the season and plays for the Marlies and earns his ELC. I think if he repeats his performance at the World Juniors where he wins best defenseman again, or if he's lights out good for Finland, I think he's going to earn that contract as soon as the tournament's over, because his development and the reason why they loved him so much is because of his defensive awareness. The scouting department thought that he had the best defensive awareness of anyone in that draft class. And initially a lot of scouting services had him in that second round range, varying up and down. And the Maple Leafs got him in the third round by trading their second round pick to Ottawa for Ronnie Hirvonen and Topi Niemelä, which is obviously looking like a gem of a deal right now. But overall, with this production right now, it's astonishing at how much of a step he has taken so far right now. I'm looking at the point per games right now over at Elite Prospects for the Liga. And Sam Lofqvist is a point per game, 2 points in two games, but he hasn't played the same amount of games as Topi Niemelä, so I'm not really going to consider him just yet. But Topi Niemelä is the top defenseman with a high point per game average of 0.87. And he's third overall in scoring, right behind, I believe, Joakim Kemmel, who is one of the top draft picks in this year's draft class in 2022. And actually, he's seventh. So because of the games that he's missed, because he's dealt with a lot of injuries. But still, that point per game average, 1.13, is still high for Kemmel. And Niemelä is closing in on him in that category. But the fact that he's developed that offensive game, I think and he has that two-way ability, I think it has reassurance for the Maple Leafs that they have players already in the system or already up in the big leagues with Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren, who have that same mentality, but Niemelä seems to have more of that offensive jump right now. Again, too early to tell how it'll translate to North America. But if you have three key two-way defensive right now, right-handed shot, you know, you're looking to try and expand on and strengthen that department right now, because I'm not going to say you should come in for Justin Hall right away, but in the future, you look at someone who could jump into the top four right now, and you're probably thinking that Niemelä is that guy that could vault over even someone like Timothy Liljegren. Not saying it's going to happen, but there's a distinct possibility that if he continues to develop and his projection is as high and his ceiling is high, so be it. I mean, this is a really special prospect that they have right now, and congrats on the scouting department for doing the homework, because they may have hit a home run right now.
That's great. Thanks a lot for that, guys. That's thanks for the story too, Alex. He's been keeping up with the younger guys in the system, and it's nice to hear about those guys outside. And obviously Peter keeps an eye on all of them all over the league. So now this one is kind of interesting, because people are gonna balk when I first say it, but Pittsburgh Penguins are supposed to be horrible this year, and they're supposed to be missing the playoffs for the first time in 15 years. And that doesn't seem to happen when they play Toronto. Suddenly this really great team shows up. That's like, how are these guys last place? I don't understand what's going on here. But anyway, if that holds true, because they don't play Toronto 82 times a year, it looks like this could be the end. And Brian Burke is there. It could be, they've got some great assets to trade away and start a rebuild there. So this is just kind of fun talk about who is on that Pittsburgh Penguins team that you would love to see in the blue and white. And we'll go a little bit further and say, if that could happen, what would the trade be to Pittsburgh? What are you proposing to Brian Burke? So Alex, we'll start with you.
That's a really tough question. I mean, it's not realistic to say Sidney Crosby, but I'd probably like to see him in a Leafs jersey. I think he's a pretty good player. No, but for real, if we're talking a realistic, if the Penguins were to sell at the deadline, in terms of an affordable price, I think forward wise, I would like a guy like Jason Zucker. I think he would fit in really nicely to the middle six. And if we're looking at defensemen, I think a guy like Brian Dumoulin would fit in really well on the defensive core. And I think both of those guys are, I mean, we all know how the market gets come the trade deadline. And I even mentioned it in my article about Niemelä yesterday. And, you know, this is the same team that traded a first round pick for what, like 11 games of Nick Foligno last year. So I'm sorry, Kevin. I know. I had to bring that up. I don't want to be in a situation like that again. So
this is a fun episode right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a lot of hurt. That's for your Freddie Anderson. That's going to kick the Leafs out of the playoffs comment earlier. We're even now. No, but I think if, you know, you're looking at guys that should come at a relatively affordable price, I would think it would be those two. I know Dumoulin's a really good two-way defenseman, and he's kind of been a rock in Pittsburgh for years now. And Jason Zucker's that kind of guy that he's been traded to. I think he's been traded once before. He was with Minnesota and they traded him to Pittsburgh. And he's a good two-way forward. I think both of those guys are just really, really dependable players that you can rely on to get the job done. I mean, truth be told, that's Pittsburgh's entire roster. And I think that's why they keep proving everyone wrong every year. When everyone thinks that they're washed up and they're done, they keep going out there and proving them wrong. So I think it would probably come down to those two guys if I had to pick. I'm not exactly sure what a return would look like, but I know that the Leafs have a number of B-level prospects that I'm sure they'd be okay to part with this year. Hopefully not Niemelä, like I said, but yeah.
All right. Peter, do you have anyone on your radar on that Pens team that you would love to see in Toronto?
Yeah, similar to Alex, I have two, but they're going to be both forwards. And one, it may help out with the top six. Like Alex said, the return or the possible makeup of a trade is going to be difficult because the market is always going to be high. You are going to expect a high return no matter what. But as we mentioned, if maybe Nick Robertson is a player that Kyle Dubas is willing to part ways with, this may ruffle some feathers because given his age and where he's headed in his career right now, I don't know if you're going to do it for Jeff Carter, but he's a name that I would possibly highlight or circle and come back to every now and then because of the fact that, you know, he's on retained salary, $2.6 million, fitting well into the top six right now, can play both center and right wing, playoff performer with the LA Kings, looked really good since coming over with the Penguins last year. 9 goals, 11 points in 14 games since that trade. So he's someone that could probably fix the offensive woes and be, you know, a major offensive catalyst with his size, with his shot, can be on a wing with Austin Matthews or John Tavares. So you have another top six scoring threat right there at a cheap price. Well, contract wise, you may have to pay up for him. The other name I was looking at is maybe fill out the bottom six with, and they already had him in the Kasperi Kapanen deal, is Evan Rodriguez. Looking really good, really sharp, really quick, better shot, better offensive awareness this time around. At 11 points in 17 games, that's really good production. And if he's able to fit in, maybe you do decide to move Ilya Mikheyev up from a third line spot into a second, and you have Evan Rodriguez with David Kampf and Andre Kasha. That's still going to be a very quick line, very in your face, very gritty. And we've seen the way that Evan Rodriguez has played against the Maple Leafs this season. Obviously, major performer, stepped up when he needed to, and he made a count. So given the fact that they had him in their grasp for a very short amount of time, given his production, $1 million contract, I think that would be a really great bottom six addition if they were going to go that route. So Jeff Carter and Ivan Rodriguez are going to be my top two choices. Return and who we give up to be determined.
That's the hard part.
Well, it's to be completely honest to all our listeners right now. We talk about ideas beforehand, but we don't talk about what we're going to say because we like to play off each other. And now I'm realizing maybe we should have because Peter took my two guys.
But, the exact two guys?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Kevin. I tried to keep things original.
Yeah.
But...
I even thought
great
as
minds
I was
think alike though.
Yeah, I know. There you go. I even thought as I was throwing to Peter, I'm like, maybe I should say my first two guys before he does, because this could happen. And he took both. So
wow.
But it's similar. And I'm going to add on one to Jeff Carter. And I don't think it's that far fetched for Jeff Carter, because where did he play junior?
Oh, the don't Sioux even don't say.
Greyhounds.
Yeah, of mm-hmm. course.
And Kyle Dubas was working in the stands during the time that Jeff Carter was a Sioux Greyhound. They had a great team that year as well. Ray Emery was in net for them. Trevor Daly was on defense for that team as well. So Jeff Carter was a great Sioux Greyhound. And you know that name sticks in Kyle Dubas's head for sure. And when you look at what Pittsburgh gave up to LA to get him, I think Toronto could come up with that. It was a conditional third and a fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make sure I've got that one right. But they could do that, I think, for him. Yeah. And he's looking really good. He didn't look that great in his last couple of years in LA, but I thought he's looking great. And then for your other player, Rodriguez, I'm sitting there and during both of these games that Toronto has played Pittsburgh going, why was he cut again? Why did he just disappear? Like, he looks like a great player to me. And all the talk on the broadcast was about how much he loves the Maple Leafs and he grew up being a huge Maple Leafs fan. And I was like, these are the guys that Toronto has been sucking into the organization, and they had him and they just let him go, and they traded for him and they just let him go. And I'm like, did we totally miss something here? Cause he looks pretty good. So yeah. Those are my two. And I think Jeff Carter would be a great addition for a playoff run. Like you said, and he hooks up with Muzzin and Campbell, who were his LA Kings buddies on those runs as well. So Jeff Carter in the blue and white would look great. And he's from London, Ontario. So my guess is he may have grown up liking the Maple Leafs as well. They seem to like that. So
yeah, I completely forgot about the return. That's a very, you know, reasonable return if the Maple Leafs are willing to trade mid-round picks for Jeff Carter. It may not work out this year because they don't have a third or fourth, but they could easily go to 2023 and, you know, maybe even improve on that. Maybe a second and a third, second in 2022 and a third in 2023 for Jeff Carter. So
yeah,
again, possibilities are out there.
And you've got his contract up. How many years does he have left?
He's going to be a free agent at the end of this season.
Okay. All right. I guess that's the one sticking point, because Dubas, we know, he always likes to get guys that still have a little bit of term left, but
yeah,
you never know. You bring him into the fold and he turns into another Spezza where he just goes and signs minimum. I don't know. I'm dreaming. Can you tell I'm just dreaming forward here? I'm thinking Freddie Anderson's the nightmare.
Dare to dream.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's fun. We'll see what happens with Brian Berg. I still don't buy the whole line that Pittsburgh's dead in the water. Malkin's coming back still. But at some point, they've got to pull the plug. And if they're just going to exit in the first round, because they're on the opposite side of the spectrum with older players, whereas Toronto's got the younger players, right? And they're both exiting in the first round constantly. I've got a really good friend that's loves the Pittsburgh Penguins, always has. And he contacted me after the last playoffs and said, do you want to come with me? And we're just going to be Seattle fans from now on, because Pittsburgh's kind of been living the Toronto recently. They've got lots of nice Stanley Cups in their past. that we don't have, but I digress. That's the kind of day it's been here in Leaf Land. California trip coming up. Things have been looking good for this team so far. See what the switch will be on the top line, what Keith will do next, and we'll be talking about it on our next show. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much, guys, for coming on over and playing this fun game of Maple Leaf Land. That's Peter Baracchini and Alex Hobson. Make sure to catch them on Sticks in the Six as well. And say hi to Forbesy for me, guys.
Will do.
We'll see you guys next week on the Maple Leafs Lounge.